There is this myth that the mighty phrase made in America has become synonymous with made carelessly, that the vaunted pride in American industry has gone the way of the nickel candy bar, that American brain power has blacked out in that most sacrosanct of American shrines, the corporate boardroom. There are those, however, who take a dim view of that outlook. Foremost among them is Tom Peters, management consultant and author, entrepreneur and visionary, an unabashed apostle of all that is good, here, now, and in the future, in business. Peters practices what he foresees, a revolution in the way managers and workers look at themselves and their work environment. His is no fancy, frilly set of theories. It's real people in real places with track records that speak for themselves and the way they run their enterprises. It's nothing less than a quest that Peters, along with colleague Nancy Austin, discusses in the best-selling book A Passion for Excellence, a gauntlet thrown in the face of anyone who makes a go of it in our free market system, the revelation that good business sense, personal commitment, and ownership within reach of everyone do what intricate systems, corporate structures, and piles of degrees cannot. Peters has spread his ideas far and wide with appearances around the world. Now he has taken his ideas and put them on tape in a thought-provoking, off-the-cuff style for you to hear, absorb, apply. He describes companies run by men and women with nothing more in common than the will to excel at the highest common denominator. Proof, all of them, of Peter's observations that their secrets are more obvious and attainable than most of us are willing to believe. In fact, they're wherever we are, whoever we are, if only we take the time to look inside for the heart and soul of excellence.
Where do you start the excellence challenge? Manhattan? Who do you start the excellence challenge with? IBM? How about Salisbury, Maryland? How about a chicken farmer instead? I think that's the place that you start. Who is this guy? Who is this chicken farmer? His name is Frank Perdue, and he runs a company called Perdue Farms. It's headquartered in Salisbury, Maryland, in the midst of the economically depressed Delmarva Peninsula. Well, let's start out. You sit down, you talk with Frank, and he will tell you with absolute certainty that in every single calendar year since 1930, without exception, and with the precision for which their trade is so well known, that the economists have predicted that Americans have had it with chicken. There's no room in the market. And yet, despite 54 consecutive years of dire prediction, Mr. Perdue has somehow or other managed to fashion an $800 million chicken company. Well, there are a lot of things you can say about Frank. To begin with, I can tell you for sure he never made it through the first two pages of an economics textbook. And I know that because somewhere in the middle of page two, they tell you about commodities. They tell you what the difference is between wheat and Mercedes. Well, Frank didn't get it because Frank can't tell the difference between a fryer and a Ferrari. And I can demonstrate that to you because take that chicken wing, that fryer, that roaster that most of us would say is a sort of pretty garden variety product, and somehow or other he manages to garner a margin on a pound of chicken that is fully 1,000% above the industry average. The industry average is around a quarter penny a pound, and Frank is able to get about 3 cents a pound. Well, let's take the next step. If you're making 1,000% more than the next guy and you're peddling something as garden variety as chicken, you're likely to have a share of the market of around zero or maybe even less than that. Well, Frank is taking on some pretty tough marketplaces, big urban areas, Norfolk, Virginia, Richmond, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Washington, Boston, and oh yeah, the New York metropolitan area. His lowest share of market in any one of those urban centers is 58%. Now, what's the magic? Perdue says, quite frankly, that he can't tell the difference between a Ferrari and a fryer. He says it doesn't matter what the product or the service is, that there is no limit whatsoever to the amount of quality that can be added to anything. And in that simple, homely old man fashion, Mr. Perdue says quite simply that if you believe in the unlimited ability to improve the quality of what you offer, and if you behave with total integrity in your business dealings, then all the rest of that stuff, market share, growth, and profitability, will take care of itself. That's the message from Salisbury, Maryland, and that's the message that's at the very heart of the Excellence Challenge. Well, let's look at the other side of the United States, a long way from Salisbury, Maryland. In December of last year, I went to Burbank, California, to visit a man by the name of Kelly Johnson. Kelly works for the Lockheed Company. In fact, took the word skunk work from Little Abner's comic strip and brought it to American industry, a skunk work being a half-licit, half-illicit innovative activity at sort of the peripheries of the corporation. Well, Kelly's record is quite remarkable. One person, essentially, is responsible for about a third of what flies in the sky today. Right after the end of World War II, he developed the first of the military jets, the YP or the F-80, subsequently responsible for the F-104, C-130, U-2, SR-71, and a whole handful of others. I mean, that's amazing enough, but what's much more significant is the story that lies behind it. For example, in one instance, Johnson got involved in an ailing satellite program. The program had been behind schedule by about 3 years, several 100% above budget. And in fact, when he first got involved, he found out that there were somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,271 inspectors working with a single subcontractor. The result of all this? A launch success rate of 12.5%. During the course of the next year, Johnson was able to modestly reduce that number of inspectors from 1,271 to 35. Get the thing back on schedule and increase simultaneously the launch effectiveness rate from 12.5% to 98%. In another case, the Air Force sent an arch rival of Lockheed's to talk with Johnson, forced him to talk with Johnson, reason being both were working on projects of equal magnitude and complexity, only slight difference. The arch competitor was behind schedule by 4 years, several 100% above budget, and had 3,750 people working on the project. Johnson was on schedule, slightly under budget, and had 126 people. And so my real point is, whether we are dealing with fryers and roasters in Salisbury, Maryland, or whether we are dealing with multi-billion dollar, high-technology, integrated systems projects, the kind of improvement that is possible is not a percent or two, but thousands of percent. And as we go through this entire program, I would beg of you to keep in the back of your mind somewhere those contrast numbers I just used, 126 versus 3,750, because I think that's what's possible and possible everywhere. There's another twist to this story. Above all things, I happen to be a baseball fan, but even if you don't share my level of fanaticism or enthusiasm and just know the sport a little bit, you're probably well aware that for all practical purposes, minor league baseball died fully 25 years ago. Well, the message never quite made it to Louisville, Kentucky. It's a fellow down there by the name of A. Ray Smith, owns a franchise called the Louisville Cardinals. And last year, 25 years after the death of the sport, Mr. Smith outdrew in attendance 40% of Major League Baseball. And 25 years after the death of the sport, he exceeded the former all-time historical high minor league attendance record by over 100%. And what's the magic? Well, Mr. Smith is very clear. He says it's clean washrooms. And for those of you who attend athletic events of any sort, you'll know how non-trivial that is. Well, in fact, that really is our simple message, though we'll expand it as we go on. On the one hand, I beg of you to keep in mind those thousands of percents of improvement that I think are clearly possible anywhere. And then in the very next breath, I'm going to turn around and say, a la Mr. Smith and his toilets, that every single bit of those thousands of percents come from trivia or the mundane. Well, let me tell you exactly what I mean by that. At the end of 5 years of searching for excellence, I still have a question, and I think, in fact, it summarizes my entire 5 years' work. And that question, which I am totally unable to answer, is why in heaven's name, in what is now a $20 billion-plus industry, has only Walt Disney Productions figured out how to keep a theme park clean? I mean, that shouldn't be magic, but it is. But it is. And where does that cleanliness come from? Well, it comes from a million things. And I would contend, for example, that it comes from stuff like the following. Walt Disney Productions has no customers. They have no clients. They simply have guests. Everyone who visits a park is called a guest. And if you're an insider to Disney, heaven help you should you ever fail to capitalize the letter G in guest if you write it down. Well, now you can write that off as true.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?